Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
All right, let's dive into this one. It's a really unsettling story from back in 1987. A family, an old Vermont farmhouse.
Yeah, the setting itself is almost perfect, isn't it? That remote, quiet image.
Exactly. But things get strange fast, they move in, and pretty much right away there's this sound, scratching.
Mm-hmm. And not just any scratching, apparently. It wasn't like a mice in the walls.
No, it was described as slow, methodical, coming from the ceiling every night.
That deliberateness is key, I think. It's not random house noises, it's focused. You gotta wonder what could make a sound like that so consistently.
And then there's the daughter, Emily, 6 years old. She pipes up pretty early on.
Right. She says it's not an animal.
Yeah. She tells her parents, this is a direct quote, "I hear him. It's muffled, but he's getting closer."
Wow. For a six-year-old, that's specific and incredibly chilling. That sets a whole different tone, doesn't it?
It really does. That childish certainty about something so wrong.
And you wonder, did the parents dismiss it at first? Or did that make them pay closer attention? Children can sometimes pick up on things adults tune out.
I imagine they tried to rationalize the scratching, you know, old house pipes, whatever.
Standard explanations.
But then the knocking starts. Three heavy thuds. Bang, bang, bang.
Okay, that's harder to explain away.
And get this. Every single night, same time, 3.1 a.m. precisely.
Oh, that precision is unnerving. 3.17. Not just around 3 a.m., but exactly 3.17. That feels intentional, like it signifies something.
Absolutely. You can't blame that on the house settling. And it seemed to be coming from, well, the attic.
Of course, the attic. Classic focal point for this kind of thing.
So they do the logical thing, I guess. They put a camera up there, just a basic motion sensor camera.
Hoping to catch a raccoon or something.
Maybe. Or maybe hoping to catch nothing, but it goes off.
Let me guess. 3.1 a.m.
You got it. 3.17 snaps one picture, just a single still frame.
And what did it show? This is the crucial part.
It showed a figure. Tall, standing there, but where the face should be. Just smooth, pale skin. No eyes, no nose, no mouth, nothing.
A faceless figure. That taps into something deeply primal, doesn't it? The lack of features is somehow worse than seeing something monstrous. It's just blank, wrong.
Totally alien. And what happens next is almost as weird. They see the photo. They bolt upstairs to the attic immediately.
Right. Adrenaline pumping.
They throw open the door, search the whole space, and
nothing.
Nothing. Empty. Dust, undisturbed, except maybe where the camera was sitting. No figure, no person, no sign of entry or exit.
So a photograph captures something definitively there, but moments later, physically, it's vanished. That's a massive contradiction.
It really is. How do you reconcile that? Was it ever physically there in the way we understand it, or did it just dissipate?
That's the million-dollar question. After this, after the photo, things shift with Emily, right?
Yeah, big time. Remember, she was the one who heard him getting closer. Now her behavior gets, well, strange.
How so?
She stops playing as much, becomes quiet, and she starts spending hours, literally hours, just staring.
Staring? At what?
At the attic door. Just standing in the hallway, fixated on it.
That she's drawn to it or watching it, waiting for something. It suggests she's connected to whatever's happening on a level the parents aren't.
It's incredibly creepy to imagine your little kid just locked onto that spot. Then comes the night they wake up and her bed is empty.
Oh no, that feeling.
Panic sets in, obviously. They search the house and they find the attic door. It's slightly ajar.
The door she was staring at, that boundary crossed.
Yeah, and leading up the attic stairs, muddy footprints.
Muddy inside the house.
Child-sized muddy footprints.
Yeah.
Leading up into the attic that was supposedly empty that they couldn't find anything in before.
Okay, wait. Where did the mud come from? It wasn't raining. Or even if it was, how did it get only on the attic stairs like that?
No explanation given. Just mud. It makes no sense. That implies something physical came in and went up.
But they found nothing up there before. And who made the prints? If it was Emily, where did she get muddy? If it wasn't, who was it?
So many questions. They find Emily, eventually, at dawn. Standing by the attic door again, just motionless.
Thank God. Relief, I imagine. But then?
Then she turns around.
Yeah.
And her parents see. Her mouth is...
gone? What do you mean, gone?
Just smooth skin, fused together where her lips should be. No mouth, nothing.
Oh my God. That's horrifying. A physical alteration like that, that takes it to a whole new level of terror. It's like the entity literally silenced her.
They didn't stick around to analyze it. They grabbed her, got in the car, and just drove. Fled.
I don't blame them one bit. Get out now.
But it's not over. As they're driving away, terrified, they hear a voice from the back seat, muffled.
From Emily or something else.
They weren't sure. It didn't sound quite like her. But the voice said, "Don't be scared. It's almost time."
It's almost time. Time for what? That's so cryptic. And the fact it might not have been her voice. Chilling.
And as they speed down the road, they look back at the farmhouse in the rearview mirror.
What did they see?
Every single light in the house. Upstairs, downstairs, porch light, everything.
Yeah.
Flips on. All at once.
Wow. A final display. A farewell. Or a sign that whatever it was is now fully in charge.
Maybe all of the above, but the absolute final image, the one that probably haunts them forever, they looked up at the attic window.
Yeah.
Two figures standing there, watching them leave.
Two, not one.
Two, both tall. Both, like the photo, faceless.
Yeah.
And both, lipless, just like Emily.
Whatever happened to Emily? It wasn't unique to her anymore. There were others like that. Or the original entity had companions or had somehow replicated that condition. That is deeply disturbing.
Right. It implies she was changed, assimilated somehow.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's try to unpack this because
wow,
what theories even begin to cover this?
Well, the most obvious starting point is paranormal, right? A haunting.
It seems like it. You got the escalation, sounds, then apparition, then physical interaction, even alteration.
Mm-hmm.
Classic haunting pattern, almost.
Exactly. An intelligent, malevolent entity, perhaps tied to the house or the land, growing stronger or bolder over time. The attic as the nexus point fits that model, too.
But could it be psychological? I mean, the stress on that family must have been immense. Could it have been some kind of shared delusion? Folie FME?
It's a theory you have to consider, absolutely. Extreme fear and stress can do strange things to perception. Collective experiences can happen.
The photograph?
That's the massive stumbling block for a purely psychological explanation, isn't it? How does a shared hallucination imprint itself onto a camera sensor? And the muddy footprints, the fused skin, those seem physical.
Yeah, those details really push back against it, just being in their heads. Okay, what about local context, Vermont folklore? Any legends of faceless beings or things stealing voices in that area?
That's a great avenue to explore. Rural areas, especially older ones like parts of Vermont, often have deep wells of folklore. Tales of spirits, strange creatures in the woods, places you shouldn't go. It's certainly possible this taps into some regional legend the family wasn't aware of. Finding parallels in local stories would be fascinating.
It might provide some context, even if not a full explanation. What about that time, 3:17 a.m.? Does that number pop up elsewhere in paranormal circles? Or is it just an arbitrary, creepy detail?
Well, the 3 a.m. hour generally, the so-called witching hour, is often cited as a peak time for weirdness. Demonic lore sometimes pegs it as mocking the inverse of the time Christ is said to have died. But 3.17 in specifically, not that I know of as a widely recognized significant number, it might have had a specific meaning to whatever entity was involved, or perhaps it's just random precision to add to the unease.
Still creepy. And the figure itself, pale, smooth, featureless face. We talked about how wrong that feels. Did that specific image appear in other accounts, like UFO encounters, other hauntings?
It does, actually. Accounts of featureless or shadowy figures are surprisingly common across different types of unexplained phenomena. Sometimes tall, sometimes not. The lack of defining features is often the most reported and most unsettling aspect. It resonates with that otherness.
Okay, and Emily's mouth vanishing. The physical change. And that muffled voice. How common is that kind of direct physical alteration in these stories?
That's much rarer, especially in typical ghost stories. Poltergeist activity might involve scratches or pushes, but altering someone's body like that, that feels different, more invasive, more profound. The voice, too, mimicry, a message, hard to say.
And the mud, the footprints leading to an empty attic, any plausible way that could happen. a hidden passage they missed.
They searched, presumably frantically. Missing an obvious passage seems unlikely, though not impossible in an old house, but the mud appearing only there leading upwards. It defies easy logic. It points back to something physical entering that space, despite their inability to find it later. It's a paradox.
You know, listening to all this, the feeling of being watched, the strange perceptions, the way reality seems to bend for this family, it makes you think, maybe tangentially, about, well, other fringe areas.
How's it?
Like stories about psychological manipulation. Could intense fear, maybe amplified by something external, create these experiences, almost like some extreme form of gaslighting or sensory trickery?
It's stepping into speculative territory, but if you look at the edges of research into perception and influence, yes, the idea of manipulating someone's reality exists in those concepts. Whether it applies here is impossible to say, but the themes of altered perception are definitely present in this case.
And that feeling of being watched, targeted, even from afar, it echoes other strange phenomena, doesn't it? Where people feel observed or influenced by something unseen.
That sense of unseen agency is a powerful element in many unexplained accounts. The feeling that you're not alone, even when you logically should be, and that the presence has intent, it's deeply unsettling.
And the complete lack of answers here. It just ends, they flee, they see the figures, and that's it. It reminds you of other persistent mysteries where the core truth just stays hidden.
Absolutely, like certain missing persons cases where the circumstances make no sense, or ongoing phenomena at specific locations where weirdness is the norm but never fully explained. The Vermont case fits that pattern of profound strangeness met with enduring ambiguity.
Yeah, the ambiguity is almost the point, isn't it? It leaves it all open.
And that's why it sticks with you. It allows your own fears and imagination to try and fill the gaps, which is often scarier than any defined monster.
So we're left circling back to the start.
Yeah.
The methodical scratching, those relentless 3.1 a.m. thuds, the impossible photo, a child transformed, a muffled warning, and those final silent figures in the window.
It's a potent mix. It hits anxieties about home, safety, the unknown, and the vulnerability of children. A truly disturbing collection of events.
It really pushes you to question the boundaries of what we think is real, doesn't it? What generates that kind of fear? And if something like this could happen to one family, in one farmhouse, what else might be out there just waiting?